Hey, everyone. Welcome to Lock on Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, Anthony Davis's MVP level play continues. And not coincidentally, the Lakers have won 8 of 10. That's next.
You are Locked on Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everyone for making Locked on Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts, always free, never behind a paywall. And you know what though, Andy, this is the kind of team right now you might actually go behind a paywall to hear things about, because the Lakers are rolling, but we're not going to make people do that.
No,
you can also go to the Locked on Lakers YouTube channel. Yes, that's true. You are burning money when you have to use the paywall. Locked on Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to get the podcast usually a little bit early, particularly on non-game nights or East Coast games, as the Lakers are on an East Coast swing right now. We're getting really close to 9,000 subscribers. So thanks to everybody for pushing us to that level. We really appreciate it. Anthony Davis, oh man. We thought he had done something special on Friday with his game against the Bucks. And okay, yeah, well, 44 points is pretty good, Andy, but it's not as good as 55 points and 17 rebounds. Only one assist, so there may not be an I in team, but there is one in Davis. He is just mauling people right now.
He has scored 99 points in the last two games. Like, he has been, over the last couple weeks of the NBA, best player in the league.
Not even like, close.
I don't care who you want to bring up as an alternative. You want to bring up Giannis. You want to bring up Jason Tatum. You want to bring up Devin Booker, Steph, whatever. These are all great players. You're wrong. You're just flat effing wrong if your choice right now is anybody but Anthony Davis. He is absolutely just laying the league to waste.
Yep.
And it was funny watching, fun, but also funny watching during this game. It sort of occurred to me that beyond all the obvious benefits that come from a guy that is just playing at an otherworldly, like Monstars level the last couple weeks, like, you know, for the
significantly
Lakers,
better, by the way, in these 10 games or whatever than he did in as an actual Monstar.
Yeah,
he didn't have much of a game in that. No. in that Space Jam sequel.
No, he actually did very little. It felt like a little bit of an, I don't want to say an FU from LeBron, but a little bit of wasting your buddy's time.
I don't know what he was doing on that team.
No, but anyway, it beyond just the obvious benefits that come from AD playing at this level, you can feel like an energy that's contagious to the team in like a fun factor. Like, basically they have a teammate that's performing like a video game and he's a new toy for them to play with.
Yeah.
And like, you absolutely can see they're all just excited by the possibilities. Look, I'm going to give AD the ball and look at what he does there. That's incredible. What? Give him the ball again. I bet he's going to do something cool.
There's a confidence and a kind of a swagger that goes with knowing that you've got, you know, the proverbial baddest dude on the floor. And for years, you know, the Kobe, you know, Lakers had that with Kobe, where you're just like, you know what, we got Kobe. And so it's like, we're going to be able to do some stuff, even if we probably shouldn't be able to, we can. And for much of his career, LeBron James has been that guy. Like, you know what? And that's where the mythology comes, like, because it's been almost like literally true. Like, LeBron and anyone can get to the playoffs. But you know what? It's not anymore. And
look
that's
at
okay.
That 2007 team in Cleveland. Holy crap. They had no, like, that should not count as a finals loss on LeBron's record. Otherwise, you are punishing him for being good enough to carry those dudes there.
It was absurd. Like, that roster is terrible.
Yes, it is. It's awful.
It's genuinely terrible. Like, I'm not even sure half of those guys were professional basketball players. But, like, you look at it, and Anthony Davis, who was averaging, you mentioned, you know, just the absurd level. Like, it doesn't, don't even have to give me other names of people who could be playing really well. 32 points, 15 rebounds, three assists, three blocks, shooting 61.5% and 85% from the free throw line. This is over his last nine games. The numbers are just like, you know, I saw some people posting on Sunday some of the stuff he did. This from NBA Stats. Anthony Davis is the first player since Patrick Ewing to record 50-plus points, 15-plus rebounds, and 3-plus blocks on 70% shooting in a regular season game since Patrick Ewing in 1990. And while we're old enough, Andy, that 1990 doesn't feel that long ago, that's 32 years. It was 32 years ago.
Anthony Davis wasn't alive when this happened.
No, he doesn't remember 1990 because he wasn't alive. That's a good point.
His parents' eye at that point. Like, it was nothing.
I don't know what was in their eyes, but that's none of my business. There are 10 people in the history of the game to put 55 and 17 together in a game. Like, it just, and when the Lakers, you know, LeBron not being that guy anymore is part of the reason that Anthony Davis becoming an MVP caliber player on a night in, night out basis was so important, because you can just, it is unfair. I realize we're talking about LeBron, but it is unfair to expect him to be that person.
No, but in the meantime, this brings out the best version of LeBron. Like, the best version that LeBron is capable of being at this stage of his career with these type of mileage and this type of, you know, the health concerns that are there. AD being like this has actually brought out a better version of LeBron.
Yeah.
And one that feels more sustainable, if nothing else, knock on wood.
Oh, I think that's the critical issue here is that sustainability. I mean, LeBron has played, let's just look at his last five games, you know, since coming back from the injury. It's 28 points, six assists, eight rebounds, 48.5% from the field, 50% from three-point range, 81.5%, almost 82% from the line. That is really good. Like, you know, historically, would his field goal percentage be a little bit higher? Sure. Okay. But like, if you're getting 28, 8, and 6 from LeBron, like you're saying to your nearly basically 50% from the floor with good 3-point shooting, like that's great.
As that the is second option.
Ding, ding, ding. And Darvin talked about this after Sunday's game. That sustainability thing is huge. Like, what this does for LeBron in terms of being able to keep him fresh for fourth quarters of games, keep him fresh for, you know, what appears now to be a legitimate Lakers team that, you know, it bears watching, you know, as the Lakers are getting closer and closer to top six contention. You know, they're 10 and 12 going into the rest of the road trip, you know, the four games left in the road trip. That, you know, that leaves them 12th in the conference, but they're only a half game behind Minnesota, you know, as of Sunday night, only a game behind Dallas, only a game and a half behind Portland. Like, there is, you know, that tight Western Conference is working to their benefit right now. And
you
they've
want to put this
got
in perspective?
That
they
guy.
Are they are only 3.5 games out of one round of home court advantage. Like,
yeah,
they're only 3.5 games behind the Grizzlies. Like, the West has done them favors with this brutal start. And look, they had some favors tonight against Washington. Like, you know, Bradley Beal getting injured early, Kyle Kuzma getting into foul trouble early in the first half. You know, these are all things that worked out, but the Lakers were just better than them.
But let's talk about that. Let's do that next, because that was actually my biggest takeaway from this game, other than holy bleep Anthony Davis, was essentially tied to the point that you were making right there. So let's do that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Turo, the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want, from a community of local hosts across the US, the UK, Canada, and coming soon to Australia. You can drive around with Andrew Bogut. browse a huge selection of vehicles.
With every car.
Yes, he comes with them all. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget. An SUV or minivan for a family road trip, a pickup truck for bulky errands or for carrying around Andrew Bogut. Even test drive a new electric vehicle that you've had your eye on. See how it fits into your everyday life or just a budget car. Economy car to get from A to B. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you with Andrew Bogut in it. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms and condition exclusions apply, including the terms about Andrew Bogut. Turo.com.
So we'll get to an interesting trade rumor that popped up at the end of last week before we're done here. But you mentioned that the Lakers got a break on Sunday because Bradley Beal went out of the game with a, looked like a hamstring problem, I believe it was, early. This is real, really, very close to the beginning of the first quarter. You mentioned Kyle Kuzma got into foul trouble, which limited his availability early. And the Wizards looked horrible. I mean, just genuinely awful. They looked terrible. And so they became very quickly a team that was like, huh, pay attention. Wizards, okay, and pretty good at home, whatever, to a, okay, that's not a very good team at all. Kuzma's not on the floor. Beal's not available. You should wax this team. And that's exactly what the Lakers did. To the point, Andy, that the biggest criticism of this game was that the Lakers did not keep the pedal down in the fourth quarter and cost themselves an opportunity to get LeBron some rest, cost opportunity to get AD some rest. LeBron took a hard fall in the fourth in a section like halfway through the fourth quarter in a part of the game that he would not have been on the floor for if the Lakers had been a little more attentive to their lead. It got down to, I think, as low as 11 at one point in the fourth quarter from, what was the high? I forget.
29.
So I knew it was in the 20s, but this type of thing is exciting to me because good teams are supposed to pound on the bad ones, and that's what the Lakers did on Sunday. And you're not stepping on the neck of your opponent to give your star players rest is a first world problem, because it only matters if you think games later in the year where they might otherwise be tired are going to matter. If your team is awful, it doesn't matter how much rest your stars get. So that was my takeaway from this game. It's like both things are positive signs for where the Lakers are right now.
Yeah, obviously you want to make sure you don't develop bad habits, and certainly this team has not accomplished enough yet to rest on their laurels. But at the same time, though, they were in complete control of this game. Like, even as they allow Washington to get mildly back into it, I was never worried that they were going to lose, but I was concerned. I was actually in the process of tweeting out something like, hey, the danger with this right now is that somebody like LeBron or AD could get hurt. And LeBron, you know, irritated that ankle. He said after the game, he thought he'd be fine. He sounded like he expects to play Tuesday, but
in Cleveland, they'd have to chop the ankle off for him not to play.
Right. But you still don't want to put this in a type of scenario where LeBron is playing through gritted teeth on an ankle that he shouldn't, because it's Cleveland and they're arguably the best team you're going to face on this trip. You know, one of the top two.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, certainly after the Milwaukee game, and the Lakers now are 10 and 12 going into the Milwaukee game on Tuesday. So, you know, winning Cleveland 8 out of 10 gives you an idea of how deep a hole 2 and 10 creates for yourself, because you win 8 out of 10, you're still two games under 500. And that's where the Lakers are. But they started off 2-0 on this road trip. You and I both said, like, 3-3 would be a great result. And now to get, you know, you have a legit chance at 4-2, at being closer to 500 when you come back from this trip than you did when you left. And that would be a pretty remarkable achievement for this team, and indicative of legitimacy. I think that's the word I keep going back to with this team is how much do you need to see before you consider what they're doing and where they are to be legitimate? And, you come back from this trip 4-2, something like that. you got my attention. That's for sure.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you mentioned first world problems before. They're playing at such a first world problem level that we can start getting into how much what appear to be the guard rotation in this game might be a problem.
Strange decisions
by Darvin Ham, if nothing else.
They pulled Troy Brown. Dennis Schroeder was available and started, and Pat Beverly was available and started. And you know, that kind of added to the amount of guards that they had on the floor, in unexpected ways. They pulled Troy Brown out of the lineup, late in the game, out of the starting lineup, I should say, late in the game. The Lakers had Westbrook, Schroeder, and Beverly on the floor together. Again, no Reeves, no Troy Brown in places that would have made sense, because Lonnie Walker was also starting. He had a great game, 20 points, 7-10 shooting. Hit all four of his threes.
He irritated his foot, though, during this game. I think that may be in part why he wasn't playing down the stretch. Mm-hmm. That sore left foot
could be part of it, yes.
That kept him out of a recent game.
So, but like broadly speaking, they have a lot of guys to fit on the floor. And, you know, Westbrook played 29 minutes. Beverly played 24. Walker played 25. Schroeder played 30. You know, 25 for Reeves. It gets hard to squeeze all of these dudes in there. Kendrick Nunn did not play at all. Obviously, no minutes for Max Christie. But it does create for some awkward lineups. And at least my perspective, the guy who seems like the one who doesn't totally belong is Pat Bev. Like, it just keeps seeing to me, Andy, like they've got better options.
The idea of him getting minutes that seem like they come at the expense of Troy Brown, who has not only played well, but offers, you know, size and utility that Patrick Beverly simply can't because of his size and a redundancy that's there because the Lakers are just chock full of undersized guards. It obviously didn't hurt anything in this game tonight, but if this is something Darvin does moving forward, you know, we'll see ultimately if there's a method to the madness, but I got to be honest, I don't get it.
Yeah, I just, you know, you are shoehorning Pat Bev or someone else into matchups against wing players. That just seems unnecessary when you have an actual wing player who can do it.
Or I mean, I guess, you know, you could be shoehorning Lonnie Walker into an undersized
if you need to
wing defense role. Like, it doesn't have to be Patrick Beverly, but you are making yourself unnecessarily small.
Right. No, it doesn't have to be Troy Brown. You need. Yeah, but like, yeah, I agree with you. And I just and Beverly has been such a negative offensively.
One point
I will say this though, like one of the things that has been great about, you know, how the Lakers have operated over the last few games, Russell Westbrook had 15 assists on Sunday. He took 8 shots. I don't think there is a Laker fan. He also had 7 rebounds, you know, turned the ball really over 6 times, you know, but when you're also, you know, it was clearly doing a lot of the facilities.
It's almost a 3-1 assist to turnover. I'll take that. He had a really good game.
2.5. So yeah. So it's not awful. That's for sure. But I think the big thing here is the assist to shots ratio is basically 2-1. Mm-hmm. And it shows again, the Lakers are at their best with this Westbrook as 6-man thing. And Westbrook is at his best when they just don't need him to score. When, you know, gets the ball down low, great. He has an easy, you know, catch and shoot opportunity, can walk into a mid-range jumper, can finish on the break or whatever it is, great. But if they don't need him to score, he doesn't have to create offense, because those have been his worst moments, I think, since making this shift. Definitely not his best.
No, and look, he seems to be, you know, I remember talking earlier in the season that I thought Russ accepted this role in the beginning in a way that he never really accepted adjustments that Frank Vogel wanted him to make last season. Certainly not on a regular basis, and certainly not attitudinally the way he did this year. But in the beginning, it didn't seem like he necessarily liked it as much as he just accepted and said, I'm going to do this wholeheartedly, you know, put my whole chest into it. Now I think he actually enjoys the role. Like, it seems like Russ is really having a good time in this role right now. I actually, Jason Timpf, we've talked about him before. He has a podcast on Colin Cowherd's network. He had a good point on Twitter that I probably have noticed this, but I hadn't really thought about this in the same way. He said that he really thinks the team as a whole starts playing with pace the minute Russ gets into the game, but it starts to continue even when he goes back to the bench.
There's some truth to that. There's certainly been many instances where that has been true.
He is doing stuff right now in this role that seem to benefit him as much as the team, and that's a really good way of keeping him in the headspace that allows it to continue.
Yeah, it's one of the great instances of managing to maximize a player's best attributes that you have available to you while minimizing the worst. And you know, Russ as an offensive catalyst through scoring is not where he's at his best, at least for this team. But speaking of that, Andy, speaking of guards, speaking of Russell Westbrook, intriguing trade rumor that surfaced at the end of the week that we haven't had a chance to talk about that would certainly cost the Lakers Russell Westbrook and reshape the roster, to say the very least. So we'll touch on that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for sports betting, info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer and esports. They've got it all at betonline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, which of course you do, you are listening to one right now, you can find those at Bet Online as well. Just tons and tons of content and information. The fastest, easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. Bet Online, where the game starts.
So Bill Simmons, I think, floated something similar to this. And Zach Lowe, I think, noted that the Lakers front office, at the very least, would be open to something along these lines. The idea, Andy, of a DeMar DeRozan and Nikola Vucevic trade that would involve Russ and those picks was making the rounds around social media last week. That would be, to say the least, a blockbuster. The Lakers connected, obviously, to DeRozan before all the Westbrook stuff happened. He's another LA guy. Vucevic is a very talented player and will allow Anthony Davis to spend more time at power forward if that's what he really wants to do. Your thoughts?
Reading from Zach, just a little bit more of the details. This was on a recent episode of Low Post podcast. The trade I saw on Twitter was Russ in both picks, one with light protections, I think, for Vucevic and DeRozan. I can tell you 100% for sure the Lakers have had internal discussions about the very possibility, if that would ever come up. Not that they, being the Lakers, would do it. Let me be clear. Just you look around the league like any responsible team would. I don't really like that trade. Mainly because of the Vucevic of it all. AD and Vucevic can play together, but not as interchangeably as, say, Anthony Davis and Miles Turner. And AD would have to spend a lot of time covering for Vucevic defensively. Like, in certain,
I was
respects,
about to say the biggest difference would be on defense,
right? But you know, this is a big deal. Like, you would need Anthony Davis in a lot of ways to be the last line covering for Vucevic, except that would mean putting Vucevic further from the basket, which you absolutely don't want him to do defensively. Like, you don't really want him guarding the basket, to be honest, but you really don't want him guarding away from the basket. So I think it messes up a lot of what works for them defensively now, or what would work for them if they brought in Miles Turner. But then, even moving beyond that, do you really want to be in a position of needing to extend Nikola Vucevic or re-sign him? He's a free agent this offseason.
Correct.
Of having to re-sign Nikola Vucevic to fully justify this deal, unless you manage to win a title this season, in which case nothing matters.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. If you don't bring back Vucevic, or although I think he would potentially be the type of player who could be traded again.
Maybe.
You know, maybe. But maybe. You know, as an expiring contract, as a player with an expiring contract who happens to be good, like, you know, he is not a bad player by any stretch of the imagination. Not a great defender. He's not a train wreck on that side, but he's not great.
He's never the train coming off the tracks. I mean, he's never
been noted as a great defender.
You definitely would have to reconfigure the entire defense and what they're doing right now, because you obviously can't move him away from the basket, but you would have, I guess.
That is true. He certainly doesn't have the defensive versatility of a Miles Turner or something
right.
like that.
And, you know, unless, like, and I hadn't thought about this, unless you flipped him again, you would be in a position of potentially having to re-sign him to justify this. Because then otherwise you are trading both of the picks that you have complete control over from now to 2030. I know they're not the only picks the Lakers are going to have, but they are the only ones they have complete control over now. Right. And whatever potential flexibility that you'd have from Westbrook coming off your books, not to mention Russ playing well right now, but whatever, for DeRozan. And I like DeRozan a lot. And remember last offseason, we both said if we had to choose between DeRozan and Russ, you know, DeRozan he ain't a perfect fit, but the obvious answer was DeRozan.
It's a lot better. Oh, yeah.
Do you think he is worth trading all of that for, potentially just for him?
I mean, if you're thinking about impact players and impact people that you can get back, you're essentially in the same situation with Vucevic as you would be with Miles Turner, except Turner's better fit with Anthony Davis, which obviously is not something you gloss over. The flip side is the guy that you are contractually connected to longer in the Indiana deal is Buddy Hield. In the Chicago iteration, by the way, I'm not convinced Chicago is anywhere near the place where they're just ready to blow. And there's a playoff team last year. But like you're then connected to DeRozan, like you have that going forward and can sort of figure it out from there. So you have a much better player coming back to you as the guy who is the one you know you get to keep. And then you have to figure out what works with Vucevic. Hasn't worked great in Chicago in terms of that pair, you know, the group that they put together. It's a talent upgrade. I mean, it's a significant talent upgrade because, you know, DeRozan can do a lot of what Westbrook does for the Lakers in terms of, you know, sneaky production as a facilitator. He's become a very good assist guy and that kind of thing.
He has.
He's a much more reliable source of offense. I think DeRozan and Anthony Davis is a fascinating combination. LeBron can work around how to play. You know, do they improve from the perimeter with that arrangement? No. Are they good with from the perimeter with Russ? No. So
no.
Meanwhile, you have a much more a player in DeRozan that requires much more attention from opposing teams.
DeRozan's not the problem at all. Like
right.
So, in terms of thinking about this,
do you feel like I'd be tempted to make the deal just because you get DeRozan and the talent upgrade in Vucevic, who if it works next to Davis, even if it's in sort of Vucevic may not like the arrangement very much, but for the Lakers, it could be useful to have a player like him available. Again, very versatile offensive player. Defensively, hopefully you can make him kind of, you know, a neutral factor with some of these other things. And
to be honest, I think the best way to play Vucevic would be off the bench.
It absolutely could be. And, you know, taking off some of the pressure from Davis, where, you know, you bring in Vucevic, you sit AD, you play them together some, but you don't have to play them together a ton. And maybe he closes games, maybe he doesn't. Again, you're talking about people who can theoretically, at least offensively, take a lot of pressure off of AD. Vucevic is sort of, you know, if Jokic is the incarnation of this new sort of distributing, do everything center, and somebody like Sabonis with Sacramento is like the next step down, Vucevic is kind of like a poor man Sabonis. He's like not as good as Sabonis, but he's pretty damn close. And again, you're not going to get more talent back. The bigger question, I think, at this juncture, or as big a question at this juncture, is what kind of trade you think you need. Mm-hmm. What is the trade? You know, Sabonis, just for people, or not Sabonis, Vucevic, for reference, is averaging 16 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. He's averaged as many as 4, basically, over the course of his career, which for a center is pretty good. What kind of trade do you need? And what are you giving up if you trade Westbrook? Like, it used to be that you were giving up nothing and only importing talent. Now, there is a cost to trading Russ. Is it filled by having a bunch of other guards that you can choose from? Is it filled with the talent that you'd be getting back? I'm not sure. Depends on what the deal is. But I think, you know, we can quit here. But, like, the question to leave you and everybody else with is, what should they be thinking about doing? And does it automatically include Westbrook? So that's something to think about over the course of the week. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show a little bit early. Some really fun games coming up over the course of the weeks and some the week with some good guests lined up as well. So we'll see everybody on Tuesday.